All right, let's, if we could do, you know, I don't have, it's not hard, but let's, if we do 15 to 20, like do 15, 20 minutes, I think we'd be great. Damn.
Oh, could have said that. That's what she said like 8 times.
That was awesome.
You just made my day.
Walking, that's what she said joke. All right, you guys ready?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect. Yeah.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That
train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bounty castle?
Hitler. Just prepare to, yeah, so just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness. Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Unbeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast. This is episode 163, coming from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're talking about Bird's trade decisions, Monte Ellis, and even more about Miles Turner. Joining me are our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacer fans? What is up, Undebeatables? Hopefully we're in the middle of a good week of Pacers basketball. And it's been a while since we've had a bunch of games to watch, so I'm excited about this.
Absolutely. Coming to you from the Panhandle in Florida, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles, John Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? Yes, even in Destin, Florida, it is Thirsty Thursday. Drink up.
Coming to you from Eugene, Oregon, out west, our enforcer, John Harper.
What's going on, fellas? Yeah, I'm shouting out NBA basketball. I've missed you. I'm ready for some games. I'm excited.
First question I got for you gentlemen is Derek Fisher, Jeff Hornacek, and Lionel Hollins all fired recently. Did any of these guys deserve that? Colson, you're on vacation. You have to go first.
I mean, you know, what did Derek Fisher do wrong to anybody except, you know, have a barbecue with Matt Barnes' wife, you know? I mean, like, really, why does he deserve to get fired?
You make it sound like she was on the spit.
Well, they enjoyed a barbecue together, I guess. That's what I hear.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. None of these teams were meeting expectations, but I mean, how good did they really think the Knicks were going to be?
Right. Well, I think the Knicks were beating expectations. I predicted them to win 0 games.
So they did all right in your eyes.
I thought they'd been fantastic.
Is Kurt Rambis that much better a coach?
I sell for Carmelo. He's not.
Wasn't he horrible in Minnesota?
Yeah. Yeah.
And L.A. before that?
And L.A. before that, yeah.
Hmm.
And the Lionel Hollins, he had, you know, a bad roster. What do you do with that? You can't coach your way out of that.
It's hard to hold Lionel Hollins accountable for all of the things that were wrong with Brooklyn. I don't know. And is the real question is Tony Brown a big step up?
Right. It hasn't really worked for him.
Sort of a placeholder, I guess. Well, they have a new GM now, so maybe he's going to hire his own guy in the offseason.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I predict will happen, right?
I mean, you'd think that you go out and find a good developmental coach and try and get these guys on the right track in the last third of the season. Hopefully just get a fresh start next season.
I guess, but you got a bunch of dudes that, you don't really care if they develop one way or another. Like, what are you going to coach Joe Johnson up for the final 30 games of the season? Like, I don't think that's going to happen. It's not, you know, unless somebody's going to come in and give the Sloan Ranger a bunch of minutes and make him into an elite point guard, I'd be definitely down for that. But yeah, like, otherwise,
it seems like a lot of unnecessary paperwork to fire the coach. The coach has nothing to do with anything on that team, right? Like, they're just bad. They're going to be bad. They're not aspiring to be anything but bad. Why even bother firing the guy?
Because they must have really thought they were going to be good. I mean, the Nets must have thought, hey, we've got a shot at the playoffs. I mean, that's
you think Prokhorov was like, yeah, pencil us in for 50.
I do.
Yeah, he probably was.
Fire your coach.
And then he was like on his yacht and he checked his Yahoo Sports app and he's like, what? 15 wins. Fire him. That was a horror. He was like Hispanic in that accent. Jeff Hornacek deserved to get fired, I guess.
Why? It's not his fault that Marcus Markieff Morris totally submerged his team. And
isn't it your job as the coach to keep locker room cohesion?
Okay. But I mean, this guy is single-handedly. I mean, I don't know. I guess you make a point. If you can't keep your employees in line, you're responsible for that. But man, they weren't a good team anyway. They weren't going to make the playoffs.
Sure.
You know.
Well, and they fired his assistant coaches for him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you're firing him because of locker room discord, you know, you've created some of that yourself or most of it yourself.
Sure. So, well, to be fair, there's no way that the front office of the Suns could predict that Markieff Morris would act like a 4-year old when they traded his brother away.
I'm actually pretty sure they could, right? When he gave them a deep discount.
Is that on a scouting report somewhere?
No, yeah. they gave Markieff Morris gave them a discount. He was willing to pay for less money because he was going to play with his brother. That's why they paid him so little. And that's what.
Well, that's on Markieff Morris. That's not on them. Why would he do that?
But I'm just saying, you could foresee that maybe he would be upset if he gave you a discount to play with.
Well, sure, you could foresee that he would be upset, but I don't think you could foresee that he would throw a tantrum for 35 games.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's going to be at the bar drunk and say, you know what, if they ever trade my brother away, I will sink them.
Yeah.
I will burn this place down.
That's essentially what he did. It was very impressive.
Yeah. I mean, the thing for me, the Suns firing Hornacek is most akin to the Cavs firing Blatt. It's not that it shouldn't have happened. It's just the manner in which they went about it was pretty sloppy.
Sure. Yep. And this was a guy that 2 years ago we were talking about, you know, was a candidate for Coach of the Year because of what he did. You know, the ingenuity he showed using, you know, creative lineups, basically.
I would love
to get that team close to 50 wins.
I would love to have him on my bench.
Sure.
You could probably call him up right now. Just have him come to your bench, you know?
Not offering you a job. We just want you to sit here.
We do need some more interns. There's a very high turnover rate.
We do have a bench outside of the Undebeatables office, don't we? Mm-hmm. Come sit on our bench.
Well, but the problem is it's right by
the
bus stop.
Pigeons.
The bus stops. The bus just keeps stopping. You're not getting on. I'm at work.
Joey will keep you well supplied with Mickey's, though.
Mickey's. And so, yeah, all the Mickey's you care to drink.
That's right.
It's still not that expensive. So the Pacers, there was some discussion going into the trade deadline that the Pacers were going to make some moves. I think the biggest one we heard about was George Hill moving to Atlanta for Jeff Teague, straight up, I think. Of course, that didn't happen. It sounded like Jeff Teague thought something was happening and got kind of pissed off at the Hawks. But nothing did happen. So now he's there and he's pissed off. So I think I heard he put his house up for sale. But nothing happened. So, you know, in the past, some things have happened. Colson, you mentioned 2 years ago, or a couple years back, the Danny Granger trade happened midseason, and it rocked your world.
It did. It rocked the Pacers' world as well.
And in the Pacers' world, by proxy. How do you feel about nothing happening?
I'm actually pretty excited about it. You know, there were some arguments on our little thread here about whether Teague was an upgrade over George Hill. And my argument still is that George Hill is an important piece on a very good team. He's kind of one of those guys that fills in the gaps, doesn't make mistakes. He's a good chemistry guy. He's a good soldier, and he's going to do enough of the right things and not take enough off the table. He's going to be on a team that can win you a championship. And so maybe Teague is a more explosive ball handler, getting to the rim and doing some stuff that George Hill doesn't do. I would be more willing to give up a Monte Ellis for a Teague, in the sense that I thought George Hill helps the geometry of our team, by a guy who can hit corner threes and doesn't throw the ball over and play some defense. Anyway, I'm glad that didn't happen. Everybody, of course, is always on the trade block, unless, you know, if the right deal comes along for Larry. And it sounds like even Larry was putting George Hill out there, and Atlanta was asking for the moon. I guess I'm glad we didn't pay for the moon. So, or pay the moon.
Sure.
Not on payroll.
Harper, any moves that you wanted to see?
I do want to say that the idea of trading Monte Ellis for Jeff Teague is crazy. I'm glad you're not my GM.
Mm. Well, no, I'm not saying I would have done that. I'm just saying geometry of the team-wise, that makes more sense, is what I was saying.
I'm not even sure I agree with
that.
I'm not sure
Teague and Monte Ellis together in the backcourt's really that useful for anybody. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. So, I was a fan of the George Hill for Jeff Teague thing, but you're absolutely right, Colson, and that they were asking too much. So that's a good pass. I do like our team. There's lots of things to like about our team. So I'm fine with us standing pat. I'm shocked, but mostly just because I didn't think that Larry Bird could keep his finger off the button. I thought for sure he would need to do something.
Do you think it was one of those situations where he was drunk and too excited and just couldn't dial? It was just hitting too many buttons.
Dialing two phones at the same time.
It was that, or they put him, Donnie Walsh put him in a room with a, four different phones that all called the same number. Right. It was like just somebody on the other end, like, yes, this is the Nets front office.
It was like some intern's job was to pick up that phone.
Yeah, exactly.
And then impersonate Prokhorov.
Exactly. Larry. I got you, buddy.
Larry, I'll trade you Lionel Hollins for
Chase Buttinger.
Chase Buttinger, yeah. He can still play. He can't coach, but he can still play.
I will definitely say this, though. Us making no moves at the trade deadline is a heck of a lot better a play than Atlanta making no moves at the trade deadline.
Sure.
That team was probably the biggest loser at the deadline, and they did nothing. But what they did do was alienate the hell out of their entire team. They're going to be lucky to keep anybody next year. And I find it hard to believe that that's going to be a very successful team the rest of the way. Yeah. I think that Jeff Teague and Al Horford will have great numbers.
Well, yeah, because they want to up their market value, basically.
Exactly.
But it sounds like Horford is definitely bouncing. And I don't know what Teague's contract is. I don't think he's a free agent this year. Maybe he is, but... Yeah, he's not going to be a happy camper having, obviously, as you said, Joey, he's, you know, was apparently super pissed that he was just getting shopped and, like, putting his condo up for sale and whatnot. I want to go back to the Pacers for a second, though, because I was somewhat disappointed that we didn't make a move. Most of this was derived from me watching the OKC game on Friday and watching our bench and being like, really? We couldn't upgrade this at all? But maybe that's derived from the fact that neither CJ Miles nor Rodney Stuckey played. And when those guys are in there, we're a totally different team. Yeah, I thought we could have made a move, but I don't think I would be willing to give up, you know, picks or anything like that, which it seemed like you kind of had to do to get any one of these bench sort of contributor guys.
I mean, the one guy that was really out there that I would have really liked to have, who doesn't really fit that great with our team anyway, would have been Jeff Green. I mean, he's the one guy who moved that I really like.
Okay.
But what we would have had to give up to get him would have been way beyond his worth to us. I mean, was there any other guy that moved that you coveted?
I wouldn't say that I coveted, but
thou shalt not covet, Jason. You don't have to. You don't have to subscribe to that.
But like Tobias Harris, I would. I think we could have given a better package for Tobias Harris than the Pistons did.
But right? What do you do with the guy though? He just doesn't. He's not a great fit. Like I mean.
Well, but he comes off your bench. He's your backup three. He's Paul George's backup, three, right?
I mean, that guy's not a 4-year, $64 million backup.
That number is going to look really good. Yeah, next cap's going to go up next year. Roof.
We're sort of in a rebuilding sort of.
And I think that you can probably play him at four. Actually, the more that I think about it, that actually would have been.
Yeah. And guys that get paid $20 million a year may only see 20 minutes. You know, I mean, that's where we might be heading in that direction with the new cap. So
no, you're right. That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, I might have been willing to give up a pick even for him.
I definitely would have done that.
The praising thing is that Detroit got him without giving up a pick, which seems crazy for the fact that some of these other guys got first round picks in exchange for them, right? You know, Monte Yunus and a couple other guys, right? So Jeff Green got a pick and stuff like that. So
I was real excited about the idea of maybe once I heard that Al Horford was being dangled, what it would take to get him. But the risk of him not signing in the offseason, you can't really give up anything substantial for him. But man, I liked the idea of Al Horford and Miles Turner on the front line together.
Sure. That would have been cool. But the thing about it is Al Horford this year is probably a max player, right? So are you willing to pay him the max? That's the question.
Right, and the max is going to be, what, like $40 million or something? I don't know how it works.
Well, I don't think that the salary cap is keeping up with the team cap properly, right? Like that's part of the issue.
No, so it's based on a percentage. The max is that you can earn is based on a percentage of what the cap is. So I think your max player is going to end up being worth like $35 million a year or something next year.
Okay.
Yeah, it's something like, it's 30% of the cap or something like
gotcha.
That.
Gotcha. But so he's still... So he's not a max player, but he's a... I guess what I meant is he's a max...
What's now a max, equivalent, which is like $20 million
equivalent to the now max. He's $20 million dollar a year guy.
Yeah. And hell, with all this money, might be worth, 30. Who knows? That's crazy.
Right. But, he's going to be smart to shop, so I'm with you. We would have had to give up a lot, and there's just not enough. It'd be difficult to have that guaranteed in any meaningful way.
I'm happy to throw some money at him in the offseason, though, because I like that dude.
Sure.
He would be a slight upgrade over Jan Manmi, much as I love Jan.
I do love Jan, but I'm happy for him to go back to my bench.
Yeah, and I mean, the flip side of not making a move, in contrast to the Hawks, right, who did a bunch of psychological damage in the process, I think the Pacers did less.
Much
less. The only guy, basically, that got dangled out there was George Hill, and that happens to him every year, so he's used to that by now.
Right.
And he's a great soldier.
Yeah.
He's just a good soldier.
Yeah, and everybody else can breathe easily, and now you can say, all right, these are my guys that I'm going to war with every day. And we've been building at this all year, so we can keep building this, right? So,
and it's probably not fair of me. It's probably not fair of me to just say, "Hey, George Hill will suck it up," even though we dangle him out there. I'm sure it affects him more than he would ever let show, because it is pretty crappy. But he did respond with almost triple doubling against OKC. I mean, he's a great guy. And the other guy that we dangled out there was Chase Buttinger, but I think he doesn't have much right to be surprised by that. He's a bench guy, so. You're absolutely right. We didn't do any damage. We didn't upgrade, but we didn't do any damage. First rule is do no harm, right?
Yeah.
and that may do us, do us good going down the stretch. So
hopefully. Who was that guy? Hippocrates?
Yeah, the Hippocratic Oath.
Gotcha.
Good guy. Good guy.
He's a decent guy.
I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with a hungry Hippocrates joke or something. I can't quite get it.
That may take a while.
Can't quite get there. Yeah, so actually, and I think that the cohesiveness of the Pacers now will continue to build. And I wanted to get back into a discussion that you, Harper, and Joey had last week about how it seems that maybe now Monte Ellis is the de facto leader of this team. He called a closed-door players-only meeting before the All-Star break, basically to say, look, you guys are playing like jag bags, and we need to pick this up.
Like ass hats.
I'm too old for this shit, so get it together. Take this break and, you know, look, take a long, hard look in the mirror. And I think that the way that you guys framed it was good. You know, it is great to have a veteran leader for this team. My only worry is that when your alpha dog is not your leader, does that cause problems in the locker room? That is to say, in my mind, Paul George should be the dude that's like calling closed door meetings and saying like, look, motherfuckers, like,
right.
You know. And he's not that guy, and that worries me at some point, I guess.
I mean, I think that there's a couple different things to look at. If you kind of look back at who the leaders of teams are, the most successful ones, the most influential and powerful ones, tend to be the best player and the leader, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the perfect model. That's what you would like. But I would say that a guy like Ellis, who is not the alpha dog, but what he is a really talented offensive player. I think that he does fit a mold where he can have success doing that more than a quiet defensive big man rebounder sort of character. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I think that sort of lends credence to it, especially because Monte is going to be the second guy that we ask to knock down those shots down the stretch. Right. Mm-hmm. So he's not our alpha dog, but he's absolutely without a doubt the beta dog. Sure. Right. He's going to be the second in line. Is that beta?
Yep. It is.
So I think that that can still lend itself to success. In hindsight, I think that Larry Bird had every reason to believe when he signed this player that he was getting a leader. I think that he had reason to believe that.
Okay. And he's definitely the most veteran dude in the locker room, not only age-wise, but experience-wise, right? He's been in more battles, I think, than...
Right.
Basically, anybody else.
And not only that, but he's coming from a really good pedigree. I mean, Dallas ain't nothing.
Sure.
I mean, that's a locker room that has always worked. It's been a well-coached locker room. It's a good organization.
Are we scared at all that Paul George is not taking the reins of this team? Even though he's clearly, you know, we discussed on Monday's show, you know, he's a super-duper star. He's maybe the biggest star we've seen as Pacer fans. Does it worry you at all that he's not like taking a more active leadership role, or do we give him a pass this year because he's coming off an injury? There's lots of other crap to deal with. He was really focused on getting his game back, and then maybe next year he's going to take over these roles.
Well, I think definitely there's a pass on that. I mean, I you know, being a leader is really difficult and time consuming, and he needed to be getting himself back, you know, into form physically and back into basketball. And on some level, though, I'm not sure that I need my best player to be my best leader. Those are different skills. And, you know, historically, some of our greatest basketball players of all time have also been, you know, the leader of the team. But that hasn't always been true. You know, there have been successful teams in which the best player wasn't the alpha dog. And, you know, maybe that's okay. Maybe he's not a born leader. Maybe he will, as he gets older, will pick up some of those skills. He's still, 25? I'm okay with him not having to take the reins of this locker room yet, you know? And he may do it naturally. He may never do it. But that means we need to think about the other kind of players on the team. You know, maybe that's why Monta Ellis was brought in, because we were losing a David West. You know, leading people and being the best player on the floor are two different things.
True, but I'm going to take issue with you, because I want to hear the examples of championship teams where the best player wasn't the leader of that team.
Okay, all right.
And I don't know who that is, right? I can't think of any off the top of my head. And I think that for this team, for the Pacers to be championship contenders, Paul George needs to be the guy that's the standard bearer, of this team, right? And like really leading by example and by words and, you know, actions.
So I think my counterpoint to that is that I don't have a lot of great examples where the best player wasn't the leader on truly great teams. But I think you can look at a team like the Bulls and say to yourself, well, Scottie Pippen would have been the best player on 29 teams. Mm-hmm. But part of that greatness is subsuming yourself to the greater good, right? And in many ways, he probably was the leader of that team. We always gave MJ the credit. But in many ways, probably Scottie was the leader of that team in the locker room, right?
Really? You think
Michael Jordan was
a crazy person.
He set the standard for the way that everybody on that team approached every game.
But then Scottie Pippen had to go translate that into something that wasn't maniacal.
Sure.
Okay. And wasn't a crazy person. Does that make him the better leader?
Right.
Yeah, you need a good chief of staff if you're going to be president, right?
Exactly. Okay. I don't disagree that MJ was the leader. He was.
Gotcha.
The Celtics in, 2010, whatever that, when did they, 2009? When did they just win with Kevin Garnett?
Well, Garnett was the leader.
He's a crazy person, right? And so Paul Pierce probably is the de facto leader of that team, but Garnett was probably their best player.
I think that Garnett was the leader of that team, and maybe Pierce was their best player.
Okay, either way.
I think you have it backwards.
Either way, it's a team, you know.
Either way, your point is made.
No.
Even though you don't have the
facts. Exactly. You went a long way to get there.
Thank you.
But I will say this, and I know that I'm probably making way too much out of this, but the Paul George thing where he came out and said, I'm being asked to do too much, I need more from these guys, to me, that's a type of leadership, right?
Sure.
He's saying, here's my limitations right now in this moment. Somebody throw me a bone, right? Somebody throw me a life vest.
Yeah, I believe it's from the book of Whiny Bitch Leadership, I think, is where it comes from.
Ooh.
I'm just kidding. Oh, sorry.
That was harsh. But I think that, I mean, for me, he just absolutely 100% gets a pass for this season.
Okay. I'm willing to give him a pass for this season.
But you're saying next that year, you need him to be not only the best player, but the leader.
I think that that's our best path to a championship. And I truly believe that Paul George is the type of talent that he could lead this team to a title.
Okay, but let me ask you this, though. So if you're the coach, GM, president of the Knicks, and your best player is Carmelo Anthony, do you want him to be your leader? Because he's your best player. Is it a blueprint that's the only blueprint?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, but history has taught us that it tends to be, right?
The Shaq and Kobe Lakers, though. Like, you know, who's the best player versus who's the leader?
We can't look at them as a model for success.
They won three titles.
In terms
titles.
Of leadership.
Well, they did win three titles.
Well, right, but not in terms of leadership. We can't look at them as a model for success. I mean, they had two leaders, couldn't decide who was alpha, and everyone hated each other. They won in spite of the fact that they were on the same team with each other.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that Paul George has done something fairly intelligent. He said, look, Paul George is a basketball nerd. The guy is a geek. And he really cares about the game. He really respects everything about it. And he's got – and those are qualities that I would follow, right?
Sure.
Which is why I think Jason, especially you and I, feel like he should be a more prominent leader because we would follow him. But I think it's intelligent of him to be like, look, maybe this isn't my year. I need a little bit of help this year. And he's making space for voices in a locker room, which may pay dividends down the line.
Sure.
Ultimately, do we need him to be alpha on the court and alpha in the locker room? If we want to be a dynasty, without a doubt. If we want to be great, probably. If we want to be perennial contenders, it could go either way. I mean, I think that there's different levels of success that come from different inputs, right?
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I think another nice silver lining, which I think you alluded to, Harper, was that Monte Ellis taking this assertive role or leadership role really puts a lot onto his shoulders now, right? Like, he has to back up all this stuff and be a leader on the floor.
If he calls people out in the locker room, he's got to go and prove it on the court, right?
Sure. Yeah.
But I think he's one of those guys that needs that. I think he does have that, you know.
Well, I think he was definitely much more aggressive in that OKC game than he has been in a lot of games.
That's the guy we've been hoping for, right?
This is a good sign, yeah.
That's the guy we've been hoping for.
Yeah. Joey, what are your thoughts? Do you give a damn?
I do. Joey hates Paul George, so I don't know if we should take his opinions.
Which is a controversial position for a dude that hosts a Pacers podcast to like hate the best dude.
Well, no, I don't really I really don't mind if he's not comfortable being a leader of the team. You know, some of these guys, somebody like Kawhi Leonard, I think is he's a quiet guy. He's a leader by example.
Yeah.
You know, he goes out there, he does his work, he does it well, and but there's other people.
Yeah, but he's on a team where there's a clear infrastructure of leadership and veterans that are setting examples for all of the young guys, including Kawhi Leonard, right?
Sure. But I think if Paul George is not going to be comfortable being the leader, that may be the case. And if that is the case and you want to keep him around, then the Pacers, like the Larry Bird, they need to find other players that are going to complement his game and his leadership, whatever his leadership style is. Because maybe that's not for him. I don't know. Plenty of people are not comfortable.
There's something that seems weird to me to like, if that's your model to, and then you want to keep Paul George as your centerpiece and then bring in other dudes to lead that team. I don't know. There's just something odd.
What if the whole thing is 3 years from now, Miles Turner is your leader, but Paul George is your best player. So it's like, you know, Miles Turner may be your second best player, but he's your most vocal and leader. And we can develop that from inside. You know, I mean, that's on the table here. Miles Turner seems like a very vocal, intelligent, and well-liked guy. That's on the table.
Well, I guess so is Paul George.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. But it seems, I think he seems to be shunning that role, at least at this point.
I guess for me, you know, just as a whole, like population as a whole, leadership isn't for everybody, you know? Sure. And you know, if Paul George is, you know, like you guys have all said, like this year he's got a lot going on, you know, but if it's not for him, maybe it's not for him, you know, but he's obviously super good at being an amazing basketball player. You know, I know plenty of people in their work are really, really good at what they do, but you would not want them telling other people what to do. You know?
Right.
Well, we always had this, Colton, you and I would always have these debates about Jermaine O'Neal.
Yeah.
Right. When Jermaine O'Neal was our best player and we really were like, he needs to be the dude in the locker room.
Sure.
Because otherwise it's Ron Artest that's telling people how to, you know,
right.
That was not
and
good.
Steven Jackson. Right.
Yeah. And we
saw where that got us.
Yeah.
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 Well, I think that I agree with you, Harper, that part of my frustration grows from I think that Paul George can be that guy and will be that guy.
Sure. Right? We've said a lot of things about how we feel about it as fans. It's slightly different when you look at it organizationally. I think if you're Frank Vogel and Larry Bird, when you're looking at this, you have to say to yourself, it is our job to help Paul George be a great leader. That's our job. That is what we are here to help him fulfill. If it's not in his comfort zone, I get that. But if you want greatness, and Paul George really wants greatness, you're going to have to step out of your comfort box sometimes. You're just going to have to do it.
Yep.
So I think you've got to maximize what it is. That doesn't mean you sit down with the guy and say, hey, here's what I need from you tomorrow. You're alpha dog. You take over this team and you get it done on and off the court. You don't do that. But you give him the tools to get better. You maximize that. And you find out. You find out without putting pressure on him to succeed tomorrow.
Sure.
And I certainly think that Paul George is going to draw lessons that he's going to pass on to Miles Turner. And in an ideal world, Paul George at some point passes that torch to Miles Turner, right?
Sure.
I mean, I think we've got a really good situation here. I just I agree with Joey that you don't want to put a lot of pressure on a guy who's maybe not comfortable right now.
Sure.
But you want to invest a lot into helping him grow.
Yeah, you want to hand him, you know, lots of books by Winston Churchill. And, you know.
Well, I mean, for me, whatever. I mean, you know, you said that the best player on the floor should be the best leader. On some level, the best player on the floor is going to carry some weight when he speaks.
Always.
Right?
And that's why it makes sense, right?
And we don't know what goes on in the locker room. We as fans see Monta Ellis pulling a players-only meeting together, and we're going, okay, clearly now he's the leader. It could be that Paul George didn't pull that meeting together, but it doesn't mean that he's not leading and teaching and calling guys out and massaging things in the background. because his
he may have been the first voice in the meeting itself.
He may have asked Monte to pull that together. So there's a ton of things we don't know. I'm glad that Monte is being more vocal, and I think it's showing up on the floor at least so far. But I'm not overly concerned about Paul George. I think it'll be all right.
Okay, all right. Thank you for indulging me.
Do you feel better? Not really.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
He feels as much better as, you know, you and I can make him feel better, which is not that much.
That's not that much, right?
Not very good at what we do.
No, it's more. It more has to do with my insecurities and anxieties that rest way too heavily on how the Pacers do and what's going on in their world. Sure.
And what if we've hit, like, the lottery, the basketball lottery where we get a top 10 player, and that's great. Maybe we could contend for a title, but he's the one guy that can't lead a team. That sort of insecurity.
Yeah.
Oh, I never thought about that. Crap. Oh, crap.
Part of my insecurity is whether Larry Bird is the right guy to teach him how to be a leader.
Sure.
Mm. That is a whole other discussion.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm saying.
You just made me really
and
nervous.
I know where Coulson comes down on this. Gentlemen, I think it's time for a break. I got some music I found. I was digging. Took me a while.
Found some
but
vinyl?
These guys, I found these guys. Who's Your Apex? I don't know much about them, but I'm excited. They got an EP out called Breakfast of Champions. Mm. Obviously.
Based on the Vonnegut book, I think.
Yeah, they actually mentioned that. We'll get a link in the show notes here. But this song is called Buffalo Wings, which I like. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the song. So we'll get a link. You can
probably
you can
because
buy
of your love of Buffalo Wings, Joey.
Yeah, big fan of the food, too.
I like the song, so... we'll get a link, so check it out. Hope you guys like it.
Well, I'll say, can you see the obvious bullshit? The media feeding you from the greediest pulpit. The culprits, NASDAQ and .com, stockade and bondage, stocks and bonds. And we are pawns in a chess game with pennies for nest eggs. Work until the Medicare's there for your chest pain. But look at it left brain, it's old as the days go. People built a pyramid to credit the Pharaoh. And they rolling Bentleys, they push a Lotus. They get a bailout and they take a bonus. They place the onus right on the people. The people need convinced big business ain't evil. They use a steeple to throw up a smokescreen. Opiate for masses in a nation full of dope fiends. Whole things right there for you to spot, dude. Still they got you sitting watching Fox News like
all day eating buffalo wings. And all day it's a suffering thing. It's so class act. All day eating buffalo wings. And all day it's a suffering thing. Give me my cash back. All day eating buffalo wings. And all day it's a suffering thing. Give me my cash back. All day eating buffalo wings. And all day biot, biot, biot. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies and pasty guys with suits and ties, which you despise, with beautiful wives and suitable lights. Like a taste of a fat chance with that lack of a pay stub. We say stuff like fuck the man, you suck the spam off the plate that he makes us. Goddamn, when we get a damn clue and stick a fork in these fucks, cause we're done for what they didn't do.
Why did he? Let's burn the whole city and turn down the shit we get served out of pity. Learn how the many can take back the power. Minimum wage, a slave by the hour. How does it change if we don't go to the polls? But come Black Friday, we show up in droves. We can vote for the voice in American Idol, but we lost our voice, now America's idol.
All day eating buffalo wings, and all day it's a suffering thing. It's so class act.
We're back for the break. Thanks to Hoosier Apex for that. Like I said, we'll get links in the show notes. If you like it, you are welcome to buy it. Always nice to support your local artist if they're making good stuff. Next, we got my stat of the week.
Joey's stat of the week.
Listener Chuck Diesel sent in an article to us.
Chuck Diesel.
On Pacers.com. And pretty cool stat in there. It's about Miles Turner. And one thing I didn't know about him was he's hits some shocking growth spurt, is the way they put it in the article. But he's, I don't have to worry about these kind of things because I'm, a pretty short dude. But he was 6'3" when he was a freshman in high school. But my stat is that his feet grew three sizes from 14 to 17 in 2 weeks.
Oh, his mom was so pissed off.
The summer before his junior year, three sizes.
That is crazy.
2 weeks. Oh, my God.
which is bananas. That's crazy.
That is insane.
They actually mentioned that he's potentially still growing. He may hit 7 foot here soon.
Was that the part of the article where they said it sounded, when he slept, it sounded like he was cracking his knuckles?
Yes.
Yes. It sounded like his bones were cracking because he was still growing so quickly.
His parents claimed they could hear his bones growing.
I mean, his feet did grow 3 sizes in 2 weeks. That's crazy.
Mm.
That's insane. I think my feet grew 3 sizes over about a
decade?
14 years.
I think that's what's keeping you from being the starting power forward on the Pacers.
That's definitely a contributing factor.
It's a good article about Miles Turner. I think everyone is supremely happy with him right now.
Oh my goodness,
anytime you can get any real production out of a rookie, that's a win for sure.
One thing that was so fun for me in that huge win over OKC, Miles Turner, he gets a first three, he ties the game in the fourth quarter late, and he did it over Kevin Durant,
mm-hmm.
who was his idol growing up. It's just so cool for him, and I don't know. That must be a weird thing, I'd imagine, right? I've never had to shoot a three over my idol to win a basketball game. That either makes you much stronger or, like, shakes your worldview. I don't know which.
Well, my favorite part of that is that his idol, Kevin Durant, is, like, 27.
Yeah, I know, right? That struck me as well. Like, wait, when is growing up? That was, like, 5 years ago.
But so, Miles Turner, I think I want to talk about him a little bit more. Jason, you've expressed some interest and dig it a little bit deeper. I think this is going to have big implications for this franchise. And we've already got mm-hmm. Paul George mm-hmm. that we're talking about. Of course, we know Paul George, superstar. But Miles Turner is playing really, really well. Obviously, he's starting now after coming back from the injury, where he got to sit there. You know, he got a little taste of the action early. Then he got hurt, and he got to sit there and watch, learn a ton about that, watching, you know, he's watching the film the whole time, he's watching the games, you know, he gets paid to sit courtside, which is pretty great. But now he's on the team, he's starting, he's contributing, he's very good potential to make this team, take this franchise to the next step.
Oh, indeed. I mean, he's the range of weapons that he has offensively is staggering. Right. I mean, we were just talking about Jermaine O'Neal and how we enjoyed watching him in that MVP couple MVP caliber seasons that he had. And we always used to joke that Jermaine O'Neal had so many tools, he didn't know what to do. Like, he would just, it was paralyzing. Right? Yeah, he would try three or four different things.
Yeah. In the post every time.
And Turner, I feel, is the same way. Like, he has this amazing quick turnaround jumper. He can shoot it, obviously, from everywhere. He's shown an ability to, you know, do up and unders. His footwork is surprisingly good for a rookie in the post. And he's really decisive, too. You know, he's the anti-Jermaine O'Neal. He kind of just goes to one move and, like, goes for it. He's like, hopefully this works. Super exciting to watch this guy play. I mean.
Yeah. And one of the things that I really like is the kid. He's got a lot of confidence shooting the ball, but he doesn't put himself in bad positions, right? You talk about his footwork. Well, part of that is when he's taking shots, which, you know, I'm looking at it during game plan. I'm like, that's a very aggressive shot to take. But he's squared up. He's got great fundamentals. Mm-hmm. He makes more good decisions than bad offensively, for sure, which is surprising at how young he is.
Well, and I, you know, for me, we just talk about this sort of new NBA and sort of this small ball era and space and pace. This kid can shoot it from anywhere, but he's athletic enough to also hold down the interior. I mean, he can protect the rim for you, and I think he becomes a very special, important player in this new era of basketball. I mean, this is the right kid at the right time. This is really exciting.
I love getting those big entertaining blocks. You know, he had that big one on LeBron earlier this season. You know, the game against OKC, I think he had 6 blocks. You know, he's just super athletic. He's surprising in how quick he can get up. And he can come out of nowhere with those blocks. You know, he's coming from the weak side. You know, teams will adjust to that, but it's hard to, you know, with Hibbert, they would adjust to him by just going, you know, just shooting like a floater over him or just kind of staying away. But it's just harder to do that with Turner because he's much more mobile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Part of that is he's got great makeup speed. That he had a couple dunks in the OKC game. He had the, you know, he made Westbrook change his shot because Westbrook did not think he was going to be where he was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's got some really natural athleticism, which was really overlooked. And Larry Bird deserves great credit because I think you all remember Gategate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was real talk that this guy lacked that sort of natural athleticism. And it looks like he's got it.
Well, I mean, part of that, I think, is that he's still growing into his body, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the part of the reason that he looks like a uncoordinated goof is that he's still growing. Like, it's insane. So that's, I mean, I think that, you know, he's going to really benefit this offseason, you know, and by all accounts, he's one of the hardest workers on the team too, right, which is great. So I think he's going to really benefit from, you know, just getting in the weight room and working with the strength and conditioning coaches and just getting stronger and even more agile, mm-hmm, you know, over the next couple of years. Because kid is 19.
Right.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about this kid is completely unquantifiable. And that's just, I love his love for the game. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's a little much for other veterans on the team sometimes, but he looks so happy to be playing, yep, basketball. And that's the sort of thing that can be really infectious in a locker room and just really positive for a locker room, right? Like, we've got so many guys who are so business all the time. George Hill, Paul George, like, all these guys. Like, you don't always see the love of the game in these guys, even, sure, though you know inside they really love it. But to have a guy like Miles Turner, who's not only good, but just clearly enjoying what he's doing.
Yeah, he just exhibits joy, right, on a regular basis, yeah.
But no, I do think that Miles Turner's enthusiasm is in and of itself a really positive thing for this organization.
Yeah, yeah.
From top,
yeah,
to bottom, sometimes we're just a little bit too much business. We don't, sure, have quite enough fun, and I think that Miles Turner can help be a cure to that.
Yeah, I think he and Joe Young both are like, yep, the super enthusiastic rookie guys, doing exactly what they should be. They're elated to have achieved their lifelong dream, which is fantastic. Yeah, right.
So. But not at all satisfied, which is even, yeah, better.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I know it's early, and you know, I mean, in Miles Turner's career, of course, but I mean, you know, he has all-star potential, and,
sure,
you know, you add that to a Paul George, you know, great, you don't want to look too far ahead, but my goodness, this is a 1-2 punch for a while, potentially.
Well, and the other thing, I've said this before, but I think it's going to be super awesome if we can make the playoffs and get some playoff chops.
Ooh, that's wicked.
His rookie year, like getting starting minutes in the playoffs, like,
yep,
that's kind of huge.
Oh, that's wicked.
So, yet another reason to, you know, definitely try to make a playoff. And if we make a deepish playoff run, so we can get out of the first round, you know. Yeah. The playoffs are like going to graduate school, you know, for an NBA guy. So,
yeah,
the more time you get doing that, the better.
Right. It's good to be going for your grad degree when you're 19, I heard.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. He's like Doogie Howser. It's going to be great.
Harper, were you talking about Orlando Johnson? I think he was the handshake,
yes,
guy.
Yes, he was the handshake guy.
The Pulp?
The Pulp.
The Pulp?
To me, he was, at that time, I think he was the guy who was just, yeah, he was the super duper excited
player. Yeah, he was, yeah, super excited. Mm-hmm.
Never did a ton.
Cut him, I think.
Yeah, they just
unceremoniously.
That's right, because, yeah, Larry doesn't like joy or fun.
He's got a really bad allergy to it.
Yes.
Oh,
breaks out in fire rings anytime he's near it.
He did have 2 games he played for Phoenix this season.
The Pulp?
The Pulp?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Just two. 16 points.
Clearly a 10-day contract situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, how was he not on the 76ers?
Right?
Seems because like they could use him.
Oh, he's definitely really better than him. Some of the Sixers, yeah.
Where were we?
Miles Turner, Euphoria.
Oh, right. That guy's awesome. Yeah, I remember the first time with the Joy. I remember the first time he was like, you know, making these big plays, and he's like slapping the floor and just, you know, pumping his fists and stuff. And it's been a while since I've seen a player on the Pacers who's been like that, you know, who's just unbridled joy, you know.
Oh, it's so fun.
Because a lot of, you know, like Paul George, he's a, you know, very businesslike. He's, for the most part, you know, he gets excited, but, you know, he's got his endorsements and.
Sure. Well, you don't want that from your alpha guy either. You don't want him to showboat because other teams will take offense.
Right.
When it comes from the 19-year-old kid, you get a pass, right?
Yep. Faux show.
What's the
ceiling? Yeah, and I think I can't find the stat, but there's something about that 5-man lineup now that he's in that starting lineup. It's like one of the best 5-man groups in the league or something like that.
Yeah, that was last week's stat of the week, right, Joe? That it's the 8th best starting lineup. Oh, that's what
it was. Okay. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're top, you know, top 10 of the 5-man lineup.
And net rating.
Yep.
Oh, that's so net rating.
Okay. Predictions, guys. What's the ceiling for Miles Turner? How far is he going?
President.
I was going prime minister, which is weird.
President. I think he can be a multiple all-star. That's my
I agree with that. I think he could. I think he can also be the second best player on a championship team.
Okay.
I think that he could be the best player on a championship team, but he will be the second best player on a championship team.
Hmm. Interesting.
We'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, I think this guy could be, you know, if he has any sort of trajectory like he's been on, this guy's going to be in the All-Star game in a couple of years. A person with that size that can shoot that well is, you know.
Well, also, ridiculous. If he keeps growing at this rate, fair. He'll be 8'5" by the time he's 23. So
that's true. No, he will be unstoppable at that point.
That's right.
They may need to call in the army to do something about him by 25.
Yeah, Godzilla type situation.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the only worry with him, I think, is that the gate concerns are real, and that there's something, you know, that he becomes an injury risk at some point. But, you know, knock on wood, hopefully that doesn't.
Yeah, no, that's not. We're good.
Doesn't happen, because I think that's one of the only things that can kind of derail him.
The one injury he's had nothing to do, you know, with that at all.
Yeah.
I think that the corollary of that, though, is as a coaching staff and as management, you do want to try and be careful with his minutes and not push him past where he should go in a very long season. Even though he's had some time off this year, you know, you do want to be careful when you're developing a guy who's still growing. Like, that's real. It's not just for pitchers who are 19 and throwing a curveball.
Let's invest heavily in the training staff.
Yes.
Let's not cut any corners there.
And let's keep him to 30 minutes a night for the next 2 years. Like, let's just do that.
For sure.
Well, gentlemen, anything else you got about Miles Turner? Anything else you want to tell the fans this week? How's Florida, Colson?
It's good. My parents are in the other room screaming at the TV, so apparently the Pacers are either doing well or poorly. I can't tell.
Nice.
Have they taken all the electricity out of the room you're in?
Yeah. I cannot. There are no lamps in this room, apparently. I can't find them. That's the...
No lamps. I know you're not comfortable.
I do love lamps.
Colson is broadcasting from the Blair Witch Project.
Coming live from this movie. Excellent. Well, what do we got? Game. We need to talk about the games coming up. Yeah.
Did we do that last week?
Yeah, we did that the first
week. Yeah, we talked about them.
Okay, that's fine.
And I don't want to open my browser because I don't want the score to get spoiled.
Oh, that's fine.
That's right.
Yeah, we talked. If you need to know who the Pacers are playing, see last podcast, or just go to google.com and type in Pacers schedule.
Or Google winning.
That will get you there as well.
You could hashtag the Undebeatables or something like that, I think, probably. That's how it works,
yeah,
right?
Tweet at us. I'll tell you who they're playing.
There you go.
Just don't tweet at Coulson.
Yeah. You can find us, though, on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. We're on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. We've got a couple things posted to our wall. Thanks to everyone sending that in. JJ and a couple other people sending some nice messages there. We are on TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form there. We'll email us a message. You can review us on iTunes. Really helps new listeners find our show. Bumps us in the rankings and whatnot. We got t-shirts for sale. People always looking good. JT, you're looking fabulous.
Yeah,
looking
good today. In that, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, man. Looks good.
For a once and always coach, Bobby Sick Leonard, now in the Hall of Fame. Turn out the lights. The party's over.
Yeah, buddy.
Is it possible that your larynx is still growing?
You can hear it snap while I sleep. It's weird.
Your parents like stand over you
and listen for it. Loud looks on their face.
And I would say that Jermaine had about 2.5 of being that scary good before breaking his leg in half.
Sure. What's nice is Paul George already broke his leg in half.
Yes.
Good.
That's a preemptive strike.
That's right.
Preemptive strike.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.